Primary election or to change your political party affiliation is Tuesday. Get registered or make that change at the Oregon Secretary of State's website. We have that link with this story at 541radio.com. Some rain today, a high near 67 degrees expected tonight, a chance of showers and 54 for a low. I'm Ashley Claiborne with News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
And afternoon. Hi there, it's Kyle Bailey back in for Lisa Platt as we continue shifting Talking Health to being around public health information with the Douglas Public Health Network and other health officials around the area and cover what's going on with the COVID-19 response. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us again this afternoon. Dr. Bob, thanks for being on the radio.
Well, thank you for having me again.
And we're going to be joined by, though we won't hear from him much, Dr. John Peterson, president of the Umpqua Dental Society. Thank you for being on as well.
Thank you so much.
So,
excited to be here.
So, Dr. Bob, first of all, let's go kind of overall in depth on the COVID-19 situation and sort of review where we stand as we here are in the midst of another Monday. Let's take a look at sort of the world data first.
Well, the world data is pretty grim. We're now over 3 million cases and 200,000 deaths. So a truly a worldwide pandemic. And what we're seeing is an increase in cases that may not be well equipped to handle it. So we're starting to see increases in Iran, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Russia, all areas that don't have first world medical systems. So real worries that it will start to spread in the rest of the world as it has in the United States. In the U.S., we're at 1 million cases now, up about 250,000 just in the last week. The East Coast is still really tragically overwhelmed by this disease. Although the number of new cases, hospitalizations, inpatients is down, it still is certainly not down to zero. And we're starting to see now big outbreaks throughout the rest of the country, especially associated with prisons and workplaces, especially meat packing plants. It's a little curious why it should be in those areas, but we're certainly seeing much of that. Testing has improved through much of the country, but still lots of tests are positive, about 18% in the rest of the country. But Oregon has continued to have a relatively modest experience. We're one of the four lowest incident states in the country. Only Montana, Alaska, and Hawaii have fewer cases per capita than does Oregon. And so we're doing pretty well there. We've been averaging between 20 and 100 cases, new cases a day, and one or two deaths a day. So still a tragic thing, but certainly much less than in many other countries. In Douglas County, we remain at 23 cases. Now we've stuck 11 days at 23 cases and 14 recoveries. So there are only 9 active cases.
Looking worldwide, when you talk about some of those countries that you mentioned, how different is healthcare on a good day in some of those places versus what's generally available in the U.S.?
So generally available in the U.S., we have adequate hospitals, adequate ICUs, and adequate ventilators. In many of these countries, and we have a handful of ventilators in the entire country. And so if you're talking about a country of 1 million people with only a couple of ventilators, that's clearly not going to be enough if COVID strikes hard. And the other problem is the testing is relatively complicated. And in many of these areas, they have no testing. And since they have no testing, we really don't have much of a clue about what's going on in those areas. And we have to realize there's a world where we're kind of connected, so that as long as there's cases in other countries, we won't be past this until all the other countries have this under control, because there is international travel. So unless we're planning to totally shut down international travel, vacations to Mexico, cruises and everything else, this is going to be an issue, an ongoing issue.
So with travel that has been largely shut down, I don't remember the statistics from our travel program on the weekend nationally, but very few people are traveling. And for some of the countries you mentioned, I would imagine there are not a lot of folks generally going in and out of those countries. So what explains a quick uptick in some of the cases in places like you mentioned?
So we recognize that by the time a country has this big increase in cases, the virus has probably been circulating for 6 or 8 weeks. So in many of those areas, there was probably virus circulating 6 or 8 weeks ago, and it's really only till recently that they've recognized that.
And so that's one of the aspects about this I find interesting, that the virus itself can be circulating for quite a while, and because many people get it and don't even sometimes know they have it or have very minor effects, they continue to pass it on.
That's right. We're beginning to see some data now that from autopsy specimens in February that this disease was probably widespread in California in February. And in that time, as people moved around, they spread it pretty much all over the country.
Now, one of the U.S. hotspots I heard about was Massachusetts. I don't know if you've got particular data there, but I found that state seems like they've had a big surge.
Yes, Massachusetts had a big surge. What happened is the big surge started in around the New York area. We think those mostly people came from Europe and then spread to that area. And you have to recognize that the East Coast is small. So the whole state of Connecticut is the size of Douglas County. So when they talk about an outbreak in New England, it's like an outbreak in one or the next county in Oregon. So those places are pretty close. There's a lot of traffic and commerce between those areas, so not a shock that this is now spread to Massachusetts.
Obviously, New York State, New York City in particular, very dense population in many areas. People come into contact with each other with many, many scores of people, much more so than even in a larger place in Oregon. And also one of the aspects about New York is a lot of folks at the front end appeared to be still traveling a lot. You've got a lot of New Yorkers that, for instance, go to Florida on the weekends, things like that, that are fairly common. So that spread things even further.
Yes, there's quite a bit of travel on the East Coast. So in New York City, there are a lot of people who leave for the weekends and either go to the island or upstate New York. And there's certainly been a lot of transfer in that way. So I look in Massachusetts, there have 56,000 cases and 3,000 deaths. So compare that to the 2,000 cases we have in Oregon, and you'll see that they've really been hard hit.
I've always lived in Oregon and have only been on the East Coast a few times, but the last time I was in New York City and Washington, D.C. on the same trip about 15 years ago or so, I was struck by and actually observed as I took Amtrak with our family from New York City to Washington, D.C., just what you said, how common it is for people to go to a whole nother state, maybe go to D.C., go to Virginia, go somewhere else for the weekend, things like that, much like people in Douglas County might go to Eugene or might go to Portland because the distance really isn't that much different.
Well, the distance is not that far. So I grew up in New York City, did my medical training in Boston, and then when I was in the Navy, I was in D.C. So I lived in all those three places, and it was certainly not uncommon to just for the weekend go to Boston, about an hour plane ride, and the time that planes were cheap, you could get on and be there in an hour. So, yeah, there's a lot of commerce and travel between those areas, and you can see how quickly it spreads.
Now, in Oregon, we've seen the number of cases really be largely in the sort of the Salem to Portland corridor, and it looks like that's still continuing in recent days.
Yes, most of the new cases are in the northern Willamette Valley. So Multnomah County, Washington County, Clackamas County, and Linn County have had the bulk of the cases.
And there are even, I didn't grab this, I looked at it earlier, but forgot to bring it into the studio with me. But I know when I was looking at some of the Oregon Health Authority data that came out this afternoon, I believe there are still some counties like Baker in eastern Oregon that don't even have a single case yet.
Yes, there are many small counties on the eastern part of Oregon that have no cases, which is really quite surprising. But yeah, there's a bunch that have no cases. Now, they haven't done a lot of testing, and there's not a lot of travel through those areas. So we're not sure if the reason they have no cases, they just haven't done the testing, or there really are no cases. But I would think if there were a bunch of cases in those areas, we'd know about it.
Well, and having lived in Eastern Oregon at one stage of my life in Baker City, I know that you didn't have to go very far out of Baker to where there was a lot of space between people. Yet at the same time, you still have a freeway that goes through, and people are, or at least were, traveling between Portland, Boise, and places like that.
And that's one of the concerns about Oregon with the two major interstates that we have in Oregon. People who are sick could get out and go to a restaurant or go to a gas station and could spread their disease in the area. So that's a big concern. And so I think travel restrictions in and of themselves are probably not going to work. But I think that they certainly could be part of a strategy to go ahead and reduce spread.
So for under the current governor's directives, under the orders that we've got in place right now, I know some people, much like you've talked about getting out and getting exercise, I've heard about folks wanting to, even though they would plan to stay socially distant, you know, want to go to other places. They want to at least drive past the ocean or maybe drive up to Eugene, go to a particular store, et cetera. What are your thoughts there?
Well, again, when we look at it, we're looking at the risk. If you totally stayed in your car, the risk would be very small. But most of our cars run on gasoline, so we do have to stop to get gas to the cars. Do you need to go pee? You do need to go eat. And all of those things bring you out of the car and perhaps spread it. So while all of those activities are still allowed in Oregon, I would ask people to be very cautious about those activities because of the ability to spread. And just like we don't want people coming to Douglas County with possible disease, we don't want Douglas County people perhaps spreading disease elsewhere. Although, as I said, we do have a very low incidence of disease.
As I was out over the weekend, a couple of locations, observing an increased percentage of people wearing masks. Are you seeing the same thing?
I would agree. You know, I've been looking each weekend and looking at the numbers, and I thought last week was about a quarter. I think yesterday when I was out, it was about a third. Some of that is because masks are now more available. We've been working with several groups, and there are lots of these great homemade masks available, so I'd certainly encourage people to have a few of those that they can use them around. And to just get in the habit of doing it, just like you have to get in the habit of wearing a watch, I think people really need to get in the habit of wearing a mask. And anybody who's seen me around town in the last few weeks sees that I've been using a neck gaiter as a mask, and it's just been part of the things that I put on in the morning.
And for some people as well, especially if they're in essential jobs, not medical or things like that, but in places where they're continuing to need to come to work, the idea of, as well, of having, if you can find them, get someone to make them for you, et cetera, purchase them, having more than one mask.
Right. So I think most people do want to have more than one mask, but you do want to wash these things each night. And so you probably need to have a bunch of them to go with your various outfits.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. Going to take our first break on Talking Health. When we come back, we'll introduce you to Dr. John Peterson, president of the Umpqua Dental Society and an orthodontist at Current Orthodontics. When we come back, Kyle Bailey for Lisa Platt. This is Talking Health. Special coverage of COVID-19 and the response in Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hi there, it's Kyle Bailey for Lisa Platt on Talking Health. Again, exploring Douglas County's response to COVID-19 this afternoon. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. And first time getting to talk with Dr. John Peterson, president of the Umpqua Dental Society and orthodontist at Current Orthodontics. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Kyle, and thank you, Dr. Dannenhofer. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So, Dr. Peterson, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in the area, et cetera.
Oh, thanks, Kyle. My name is John Peterson, and like you said, I work at Curran Orthodontics. I'm the orthodontist there. I moved to Roseburg a few years ago, about 4 years ago, with my wife, Kat. She is a hand therapist, and my two boys, Jack and Milo. We moved from New York City, actually. Interesting, after you were just talking about that last segment, I did my residency there, and we've loved living in Roseburg. We moved here to be closer to family and to and also raise our family, and we just have grown to love the people in the area.
So,
it's really a great place to live.
Were you in New York City or elsewhere in New York State?
Actually, I was in New York City, and my hospital was at the Bronx. We are the epicenter of this. It's really kind of crazy to be able to look at it and watch and to see the videos that the nurses, you know, in the hospitals. I walked those halls, and that was where I was at a few years ago. It's interesting. And it's scary, but it's great to be able to see the great response we have here and the teams we have in place. And Dr. Gannonhofer's really helped lead the way to keep our area safe.
I'm curious, since you brought this up, are you still in contact with some of the folks that you worked with back there?
Oh, daily. Yep, daily. They're great people. We speak with the hospital staff. We a lot of the teams have been repurposed. You know, they were physical therapists or orthodontists, or they were all sorts of different things, and now they're all working in respiratory areas and keeping things clean and sterilizing, and units have been shut down and turned into respiratory areas.
Wow, that's almost a little closer to this than you want to be at some level, isn't it?
You know, it was definitely very scary, especially as those numbers were spiking. But we're seeing things, although we're not out of the wind, we are seeing some improvements in some of the numbers. And it was interesting. Dr. Gannonhofer can speak to this even more so. But they studied that in New York, they found 13.7% of the people have antibody titers to it. And so it's kind of interesting just to be able to see that many people have been affected with it already.
Dr. Bob, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, there's data. They did a study in New York where they looked at the antibody levels of different people in the state, and people in low areas of the state, such as upstate New York, had low levels of antibodies, but people in New York had as much as 13 or 14% antibodies. And that suggests this disease really spread through the area. What it also suggests, though, is that there's still 86% of the people get it the next time. So although it's blown through the city one time, it doesn't mean they could not be hit again. So a little cautionary there.
Wow. So, Dr. Peterson, you're president of the Umpqua Dental Society. Tell us some more about the organization.
Oh, the Umpqua Dental Society is a local chapter of the Oregon Dental Association. We are the state's chapter of the American Dental Association. So it just kind of breaks down from the American Association down to the state level, and then we're the local chapter. We're primarily Douglas County into Coos Bay and a little bit south, and we're comprised of the dentists and dental specialists in the area.
And maybe explain, too, just to put it out there, the difference between an orthodontist and a dentist.
Oh, well, thank you. There's lots of different specialties within the dental field. There's orthodontists. We primarily focus on moving teeth, aligning them with braces or clear aligners or things like that. There's people who take care of your gums, periodontists. I get to work with Dr. In the local group. Our treasurer is actually Dr. Shashank Joshi. He helps run Umpqua Periodontics here in town and implants. And so he's been helping us with the coordinated event, and he would be working with gums. And then there's other specialists who would be working with implants or surgeons or things like that. The dentists are amazing, and they are the best at keeping your teeth clean and keeping them in the functional use. And then the specialists kind of take different aspects of it. And I like to focus on aligning the smile and making it pretty.
Well, and listening to your description there, I brought back to times with a couple of kids who are now in their 20s, at least one of which required an orthodontist. So I remember those days and navigating that as a parent. That's kind of an interesting time. But, of course, that applies not just to kids but adults as well, depending on what's going on. So talk about, first of all, what has it been like to – because of the elective, although that term is a little misunderstood, medical procedures not having taken place for several weeks, that's put you a bit on the sidelines. What's that been like?
Oh, definitely. It's been hard to be on the sidelines. We want to be there for our patients. We get calls from their patients, and we want to be there. We have been able to see patients for emergent care, and that's been nice to be able to keep patients out of the ER where it might be needed to more pressing issues or to try to limit PPE and things like that. So we've been able to do emergent care, but we are excited to be able to to start seeing patients again May 1st. That's going to be limited in our – we're not going to be able to ramp back completely. We do have some restrictions, and it's going to be a gradual process, but we're excited to be able to finally be able to start helping our patients more and start doing some more care for our patients.
So talk about that process, because as I was reminded earlier today, this isn't really like flipping a switch on Friday, which happens to be May 1st. There's a lot of things that have to be ready before then.
You're right, Kyle. There's a lot of steps that we're trying to prepare and get ready for. Our offices are going to be different, and the experiences that the patients will see when they come in will feel slightly different. Not huge changes. Obviously, you're still going to get the great care, and infection control has always been something that's been paramount for dentists and medical professionals around. But that being said, we do want to make sure that we increase our cleaning procedures, maybe we restrict the number of patients in, and a few other procedures that we're doing to help just keep everyone healthy and continuing on.
So then do you have to before you're able to begin on Friday or whatever time your office begins, do you have to demonstrate to Oregon Health Authority or somewhere that, okay, we have these things in place, this is how we can work and we're ready to go, or how does that part go?
We've been getting sets of guidelines from the state with different procedures and processes that we should be following, guidelines from the CDC as well as the primary source. So we're following those rules and guidelines. I do know that we always want more. Everyone, we want to be as clean and as helpful as for our patients as possible. And so we're continuing to look for more guidelines and more clarification. At the same time, we're being overly cautious. You know, it's better to be overprotective than under. And so we're just doing as much as we possibly can to continue to provide great care and keep our patients healthy and safe.
So as an orthodontist and for folks that are a dentist, is it what they're having to ready, is it much the same?
Yeah, primarily. We have a shopping list that I can share that's been sent from the ADA, a couple different guidelines and things that they're recommending. And some things that they're recommending is they want to make sure before we're back that we have at least a two-week supply of all recommended and, in many cases, increased PPE. And so we have to have two-week supply. But they also don't want us having an overabundance and having other people not being able to get it as well. And so it's this fine line of having enough that we can continue to run and still making sure that we're not hoarding. A few of the things that we're looking for are N95s. We are getting more surgical gowns, masks with more face shields. And then, as you've seen around town, just different protective barriers for the front staff. And we're limiting waiting rooms. We're going to do waiting rooms from cars and more virtual appointments and things like that.
So, for instance, once you are having resumed your service, then when someone shows up, is it going to be that they're going to be guideline to essentially check in or let somebody at the front office know they're there via a text or from their phone, something like that?
You know, I'm going to let each office handle their processes as they will at each office. But some of the guidelines we've been given is to try to limit the waiting room. And I think a lot of people are going to do car side waiting rooms, either calling in or texting in. It's nice that we have that option. We're limiting the number of patients, and so we won't be seeing the same number of the volume of patients. We'll be slowing that down and increasing the cleaning time and the space between patients to help with air cleaning and different things like that as well. So appointments are going to be limited. There won't be as many people in, but it's more than we're seeing now, and we're truly excited to be able to start making a step in the positive direction.
Have you had to or will you have to even make some changes on, for instance, how front office staff is set up, things like that?
Yeah, very much so. And we're thinking about this long term. You know, some of this is, as Dr. Dannenhofer has shared, some of this is temporary, some of this is long-term, and some of this is probably permanent. And so we're just trying to find that and watch the guidelines and continue to, every day it's changing, and just stay on top of it as best we can.
And Dr. Bob, talk about that a little bit, about how for every area of medical care, how a visit to the doctor's office, how much different it might be, at least in the near term, if not perhaps for the long term.
Well, I think in the near term, you're going to see most providers wearing masks for the full day, because I think what we've seen with COVID, it is difficult to tell who's got it and who doesn't, since there are many asymptomatic cases and there are very many mild symptoms. So I think you'll see doctors wearing masks in the office on a regular basis. I think you'll see a lot more telehealth. Telehealth has actually been better than I would have predicted it would be. Some of these visits by phone have been really effective and really quite convenient for the parents. I think the other thing that you're going to see is that some of the practices are going to really struggle. The dental offices have been out for over a month now, and many practices are going to be out for a month and then at a low level for many months. And they're small businesses that may really struggle with this. So I think you might see some small practices close. And while that would be tragic, it's not totally unexpected.
So, Dr. Peterson, for you to get this opportunity to be back doing it again, I could hear the sort of the excitement, if you will, in being able to, at least to some level, get back to something approaching normal.
Definitely. I want to be cautious in that excitement. We're excited to see patients. We're excited to be able to help patients. We're not excited just to make money. We're excited to be able to go back and but yes, we do want to keep the lights on too. And we're really thrilled that we can be able to help people. That being said, it's not business as usual. It's definitely very pared down, and we're still being cautious in what we're doing. Some of the major things we're watching are aerosolized saliva, things like that. We want to watch as you're using your handpiece. They might be limiting that and doing more hand cleaning and things like that as well. Another thing that you mentioned, the small business and slowly ramping up. We're concerned with dentists in the area are kind of concerned with the PPP program, because we do have opportunities to be able to access some amazing funds to be able to help keep the businesses going. But at the same time, if we're caught under these restrictions, which are warranted, but we're not able to ramp up completely because of those restrictions, we then lose some of the abilities to waive some of those benefits in the PPP program. And so it's an interesting dilemma where we're at. And we're doing our best in trying to find the silver linings throughout everything.
And I would imagine, too, for a lot of smaller practices, when it comes to even long-term purchase of PPE, for instance, it's a harder pathway than maybe a larger medical organization that's even still a part of a bigger organization where people can buy in bulk, if you will.
Kyle, you hit the nail on the head. We as local offices, we order through conglomerates, different groups that help come to the area to help provide PPE. We also, some people join up in larger groups so they can buy in bulk. Even with those groups, we are still finding it hard to be able to get all of the proper PPE. And so some offices, although they have the ability to open, are not able to open because we are wanting to make sure we're following those guidelines to the T. And if that means we don't have that material yet, we can't open.
And obviously, when you're talking medical care, caution is definitely the name of the game. You don't want to not be ready and start treating folks and then suddenly have to stop again.
Yeah, we want to be consistent with our message and consistent with our care and make sure that patients know that they have somebody that's there ready to help. And at the same time, we are starting to see people. It's a positive message, and we're excited to be able to start doing that. So,
all right, going to take a break here on Talking Health. More when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and Dr. John Peterson, President of the Umpqua Dental Society and orthodontist at Current Orthodontics in Roseburg. It's 4:36, a 3-minute break here. Then we'll be back with more of Talking Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Another edition exploring Douglas County's response to COVID-19. Kyle Bailey in for Lisa Plath this afternoon. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and Dr. John Peterson, President of the Umpqua Dental Society, with us this afternoon. Right ahead of the break, one of you mentioned telehealth. Dr. Bob, I wanted to go a couple directions on the telehealth idea. One of our national programs early this morning, I believe it was, a doctor who was on there said he had not ever done telehealth or maybe other than a few emergencies ever in his career until a few weeks ago. And he said now he's hooked on it, and he hopes that after all of this ramps back to something approaching normal, the telehealth he feels like is going to be an even bigger thing than it was ever before.
I believe it will. So they've changed some of the rules on telehealth that made it easier to do, but the visits have been surprisingly effective, and people have been incredibly grateful that we're doing them. So I'm going to be seeing some patients tomorrow, or actually seeing them on the phone tomorrow. And so we're going to do some now. There are some things you obviously can't do by telehealth, but it's remarkable how many things you can do by telehealth.
And what about things like taking temperatures, things like that, that are a routine part of most every medical visit?
So it turns out that most people have a thermometer at home, most people have a scale, most people have a blood pressure cuff, and so people can do it at home, and really they should be doing those things at home. So if somebody has high blood pressure, they shouldn't just take their blood pressure once or twice a year when you see them in the office. They should be taken on a more regular basis. Similarly, if you're following somebody for a fever, they shouldn't just be taking the temperature in the office. They probably should be taking it every few hours at home. So actually, I thought that was going to be a big problem, but it has turned out not to be.
What about the aspect, though, of being able to physically see the patient? I mean, you can see them on the phone or via Zoom or Skype or on a computer, whatever the device is, but it can't quite be the same.
It is not the same because, you know, a skilled provider, when they walk the patient walk, when they look at their facial expressions, when they look at the amount of movement in the room, you can gather clues from all of that. And I think we will lose something if we moved all to telehealth. But I will bet that we could probably move as much as 50% of our visits to telehealth. You know, in many cases, the reason people are coming back to see how their depression medicine is working, or they're coming back to talk about a sleep problem, and those things you can do very well by telehealth.
And the national program this morning, I think the line was a lot of doctors have been fighting against telehealth, and now they've totally switched to the other side.
I never totally was against it. So there are some billing issues that have made telehealth difficult in the past, but I think you'll see from this a much greater acceptance of telehealth.
But Dr. Peterson, then I think about how do you do orthodontics via telehealth? That seems like a different avenue, different issue.
Kyle, you would be surprised. I have done so much more than I thought I would be able to do via virtual care throughout this pandemic. One thing that helps with that is our office has about 50% Invisalign, and we're seeing a lot more clear aligner therapy in the orthodontic realm. Patients have been able to come and continue on with their care because they're treating themselves at home. We have a system in place where they're able to take photos, and there's apps on their phone that show them exactly how to position their face in different ways to take selfies. And the teens are taking so many selfies anyways, they're pros at this. And so they just take a couple selfies and they zoom in on a couple spots, and it's unbelievable. They're placing spoons in their mouth to help keep the cheeks out of the way. And we've been able to actually move forward on quite a few of our patients, even while in this procedure. And we're seeing that across the board, not just in the specialty of orthodontics, but for instance, the vice president of the Umpquad Dental Society, Dr. Jeff Kobernick, he's been able to help treat a lot of our other patients. He sees patients in the office and also is able to do other things through Zoom and other things like that. It's an amazing platform to be able to have that opportunity.
But I don't suppose we're ever going to get to the point where the patient is actually physically loosening or tightening the brace himself.
Let's hope not. I need to be able to work too, but at the same time, yes, there's going to be limitations. You're right. But if we can limit one of the appointments and be able to see somebody who then maybe is more critical, or maybe at this point where we can have a couple people be able to either continue on with care that we know are working, and then the patients that we see, you know what, there's an issue here, then have them come in and be able to see them in office. So it's just a way to be able to limit it.
As people are waiting to see their providers again, dental or in other areas, and I guess maybe let's stick on the dental side, orthodontic side for a moment, What kinds of things should they be doing to not only get ready to be seen again, whether it's virtually or in person, but for instance, just taking better care of their teeth, et cetera? What kind of guidance would you give them?
Well, thanks. Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of different things that they can be doing at home. Obviously, just keep brushing and flossing. A lot of people don't floss as regularly as they should be. This is a time when they really need to be keeping up on their hygiene when they're not being able to get to all of their cleaning appointments. If also, don't forget your underlying systemic issues. Stay on top of your A1C if you're diabetic. Keep working out. Eat healthy. Have fun with your family. Stay healthy mentally. And there's a lot of things that go into this care. It's not it's a whole body care, not just siloed into the mouth or into the heart or one area. We're a whole unit, and we work best when we keep care of the whole thing.
And on the dental side, though, for instance, I wrote my notes for this interview, and then I apparently provided myself a reminder that two or three times a year, I've got a hygienist who reminds me that I do have an electric toothbrush as well as the standard kind, and I should probably use it more.
Yeah, keep brushing, keep flossing, keep wearing your retainers, keep cleaning your dentures, keep doing all the things that your doctors have been telling you to do. Also, keep in communication. We're there to be able to work with you. If you're having an issue, let us know, and we have opportunities in place to be able to see you and methods that we can treat people healthily. And again, starting May 1st, it's going to be expanded slightly. Not fully, but slightly, and we're excited for that opportunity.
So what should folks do? And I realize every practice is different, so it's hard to make a blanket statement, but should people wait for their provider to contact them? Should they send an email and say, okay, when can I get on the schedule? Or of course, appointments were just sort of put on hold. How do people proceed?
First and foremost, I would say if you're in pain or having any issues, please contact your dentist. If you're having other health issues, talk to the ER and talk to Dr. Dannenhofer and all the other crews that are there to be able to help them. But once you're able to have your crown seated, or you're able to start getting that next filling done, or your braces tightened, and you're already at that level, feel free to reach out to the dentist this week. If you don't hear back immediately, understand that they're going to be reaching out to every single patient in their practice, and they're rescheduling all of the patients that have been, rescheduled during this time. So bear with us. We're going to be getting to you. Feel free to contact us, especially if you're in pain. But if you haven't heard from them, I would say in a week or two, feel free to reach back out.
Well, and clearly as well, when you've had several weeks off, you're not going to be catching up with everybody, especially when you're ramping up slowly anyway. But even if you were ramping up faster, you're not going to be able to catch up with everybody overnight.
That's correct. And again, like we've said, there's a limited number of people that we can see. Our schedules are going to be much lighter. And previous times, we've focused on efficiencies and production and things like that. Now our primary focus at this point is health and continuing the safety. And so that is the function, and production is put at a side point.
I imagine as a orthodontist working in this area, it's probably been a learning time for you and your staff as well.
Very much so. You learn from the hard times, and this has been a hard time. But at the same time, we've seen a lot of great growth. We're expanding. We're doing more teledentistry areas and telemedicine areas. We're finding new ways to conquer problems, and we hope that some of these new novel solutions can continue to benefit our patients here in Douglas County in the future, even after this.
All right, going to take a break. One final segment when we come back. It's Talking Health, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and Dr. John Peterson, President of the Umpqua Dental Society, from Current Orthodontics. When we come back, we'll cover some things about what's ahead with the Douglas Public Health Network, the testing clinics, Facebook Live events, and more. It's a special Talking Health. Kyle Bailey for Lisa Platt, 449 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
It's Kyle Bailey and for Lisa Platt. The afternoon report coming up with Douglas County's news team. Make sure and look for information at 541radio.com, the 541 Radio app, and the Facebook page of News Radio 1240 KQEN as well. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and Dr. John Peterson, President of the Umpqua Dental Society from Current Orthodontics, with us this afternoon. Dr. Bob, let's kind of review what's been going on with Douglas Public Health Network. And first of all, let's talk about the testing clinics and where things stand there.
Well, our testing clinics are still going each Tuesday and each Friday here in Roseburg, and then on the weekends at the coast if we need it. Still, it's open. Just talk to your doctor. We're now seeing anybody over the age of 15. We initially had wanted people who had severe symptoms. Now we're seeing anybody with symptoms or anybody just you want to get tested. We can do the testing. They're incredibly quick at it. They're doing, they can do 20 an hour and just blast them right through. We're getting test results back quickly. We were we reconfirmed that none of the patients will get a bill. So this is a good thing to do. If you're at all questioning if you have the disease, you should get tested.
And, of course, this has changed so much in the past few weeks, because initially there were some folks that thought maybe they should be tested, but they didn't quite meet the criteria. And there was a lot of back and forth about that. What about the testing levels of people in Douglas County? How does it compare to some of the other parts of Oregon?
Oregon overall has done a very good job in testing. And the things that we look at are both not only the number of tests that were being done, but what the positivity rate is. So you're doing enough testing if you've done, say, 6 or 7 per 1,000, and we've done at least that. And then you also know if you've done enough, if your rate of positives is low. Now, if a quarter of the tests you're doing are positive, then you're not doing enough testing. So you probably should be at a rate of less than 5%, and we're at less than 2% over the last 2 weeks. So if there's disease out there, we're not sure where it is because we're looking hard for it.
So 23 positive cases, 920 negative tests as of today.
Right. So, you know, when you look at it, we're about a 2.5% positive rate, and most of those were all in one clinic that we'd had a few weeks ago, and since then the numbers have been really very small. So I think people are doing a great job.
And for the Douglas Public Health Network, then you added some folks. You talked about that Friday during the press conference at the courthouse. Excuse me. Are you keeping all these folks busy right now?
Well, believe it or not. In most of the other counties are overwhelmed with cases and they can't keep up with them. And while that's a nice problem to have, the problem here is we don't have enough cases to keep them busy. But they're still working on training and they're still working on following old cases, but we've done a remarkable job of keeping the number of cases low. I was just on a conference with the state and they're going to hire several hundred people to do that contact tracing. And it's probably going to be necessary in other parts, but at least for now, we have the luxury of them not being super busy.
Now, you're a advisor on the task force for Oregon's Governor Kate Brown. Talk about what you've done in that arena in the past week.
Well, this is a group of some very smart people she's pulled together. I'm not quite sure why she has me, but a group of very smart people that she pulled together to give her advice about blind spots and to bounce ideas off about how we're going to go ahead and progress with this, including opening up economically. And there's some really smart people who are doing a lot of work to try and get this right.
And when you meet as a group virtually, how long do those meetings tend to be?
I think we spent 6 or 7 hours last week and then many, many more hours getting the stuff ready. So this is a hardworking group.
And your role, though, as I believe it's 8 people, is to sort of lay out your case based on what the governor is asking about that given time. But it's still the governor that's going to make the decision.
Right. This is a political decision to make. So, if you asked public health people, they'd say, why don't you just close everything forever? And then the disease would never spread. But quite obviously, that's not going to work. And so what you need to do is to balance the economic and social harms of staying shut down versus the harms of opening up. We know that when we open up, we're going to likely have some more cases. And we might actually have quite a few cases in places that are hard to control, like prisons or factories. And so we just need to be ready should they occur. And while this virus will set the timelines, it appears that probably Southern Oregon is in as good a position as almost anywhere to open up.
And hence the sort of the direction from some of the counties in the area, hoping that maybe even this region might be the one to be able to open first.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know what the I don't get to make political decisions, but we'll see. You know, this is a big and complicated area, and so we'll see what happens. There are other areas of the state that have no cases, as we talked about, and so those areas might actually go first.
So for people that are going through this situation, there's a lot of emotions to this. There's a lot of fear, both health-wise and economically. What about the mental health side of all this?
Well, I think the mental health side of this is critical. As you know, before all this started, we had lots of people with depression and anxiety. And being out of work, fearing for your loved ones, and hearing all this terrible stuff in the news can certainly both worsen depression and anxiety. So what we're telling people during this time is, you know, telehealth visits for mental health are incredibly effective. So please, please, please do those. We're asking people not to make changes in their medications without talking to the providers. And then we do know, especially if they're young people, there are things that you can do that can improve your mental health. And that would be not abusing substances, getting enough sleep, and getting some exercise. So exercise, especially in young people, is very effective in alleviating both anxiety and depression.
And there are still some people that are reluctant, though, to go out and get exercise.
And you shouldn't be. This is a great time, in fact, to stay healthy. Stay home, stay healthy specifically says that you should go outside and get outside exercise. So yesterday I took a nice long bike ride. I was pretty much by myself. I had my face covering so that if I got near anybody, I put it over my face. And I took a 20-mile bike ride, and it was absolutely delightful, and I would encourage everybody to do the same.
All right, out of time for now. We'll reconvene again soon. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and also Dr. John Peterson, President of the Umpqua Dental Society. Thanks to both of you for being on today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
And Dr. Bob, you've got another Facebook Live event tonight as well, right?
Tonight at 6 o'clock, we'll answer everybody's questions.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, doctors, for being on this afternoon. That wraps up the program for today on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.